Okay, so rapture or piti is the fourth step on this sequence of steps called transcendental dependent arising, which begins with suffering and ends with liberation, and as most of you know, is our focus for the year here at Seattle Insight. And rapture, or piti in Pali, is our topic for the month. And Lyndall gave us a really excellent overview last time of piti. So if you missed that, it would be well worth listening to it when the talk comes up on the website. And I'll try not to repeat too much of what she said. Okay, so whenever I get a new topic, a new word, I like to see what image jumps into my mind first. Because then I know what kind of conditioning I'm starting with, right? Now, for rapture, well, the first thing that came to my mind, I was driving, and I think I was in Vermont, as I recall. And I was behind this really old, rusty car. And I could see that it had a bumper sticker. But I couldn't read it because I wasn't close enough. But then we came to a red light, and I pulled up right behind it, and I saw the bumper sticker, and it said, "When the rapture comes, can I have your car?" And I thought, oh, that is my view of the word rapture. This conviction, by some evangelical Christians that the second coming or the rapture is imminent, that all the predictions and revelations are about to come true. Christ is going to come down on a cloud, spirit them away to heaven, and the rest of us, I guess, into the fiery pits of hell or something. So I thought, okay, I am quite sure this is not what the Buddha had in mind. So this is going to take some deconstructing. This word, even more than the word faith did. Okay, so what did the Buddha have in mind? Frankly, I had no idea. So I started out my investigation and I started where I often start, which is YouTube. So I put Rapture Piti in the search box and I came up with several things and a couple of them by two monks, one called the Venerable Matiko and the other one Thanissaro Bhikkhu. Both of them are part of the forest tradition, highly respected teachers. And these are very, very short, almost fragments of their teaching. But what they were talking about was how to access the jhanas. Now, the jhanas are these levels of concentration that you can get into through doing certain practices. And we don't really teach the jhanas here at Seattle Insight, and there seems to be some disagreement on the usefulness of the jhanas. And anyway, supposedly, though, rapture is experienced in the first jhana. Now, this reading about, I had to read about the jhanas because I really haven't done these practices. And reading about them kind of reminded me of the very first spiritual path that I was ever on, which was in 1990. I was living in Montreal. I had been there for a few months. I was miserable. I was homesick. I was working in French, my second language, which was really hard. And I met somebody who was doing this meditation, and I thought, meditation, that's what I need. That's going to fix everything. So this path was called Saurabh Yoga. It was, you had to be initiated. There was this master from India. So I went and I got initiated, and then you get this mantra, which is secret. You can't tell anybody outside the path, what the mantra is. And so the whole, and then you use that mantra during the meditation, and the whole focus was on the meditation. And there were these five levels of consciousness that you could access. And when you got to the fifth one, supposedly you were enlightened. And I have no idea how this corresponds to the jhanas, but it kind of reminded me of that. And I have to admit, I had some amazing experiences. I was meditating 3 hours a day. And I had some really amazing experiences with this meditation. And I would think, yeah, okay, I'm enlightened. You know, and then I'd go and get mad at somebody or something and realize, well, maybe not. But the thing about this path was that the whole focus was on the meditation. There was no focus on daily life. Daily life was just considered to be an illusion. And so it was like an escape. And at first that was fine because I wanted an escape. That's why I was doing this. But after, the problem with daily life is that, you know, illusion or not, it doesn't go away. You still have to deal with it. And I wanted something that would help me deal with my daily life. So I drifted away from this path and began to focus more on yoga and then eventually Sufism. And so when I watched these little videos, and as I say, these are just a fragment of these people's teachings, but I realized that's not really what I want. I don't want to know about how to find rapture in the jhanas. I want to know, how does this apply to my life? Does it apply to my life? So then I thought, okay, well, I'm going to see, what does the Buddha say about rapture? So I found a couple of very interesting things. The first one is kind of famous. It's from the Mahasakaka Sutta, and it was his story of when he was young and he was still living with his family, and he was sitting under the rose apple tree, and his father was working nearby, and this is how he described his experience. He said, I was quite secluded from sensuality, secluded from unskillful mental qualities. I entered and remained in the first jhana. There's the jhanas again. Rapture and pleasure born from seclusion, accompanied by directed thought and evaluation. Could that be the path to awakening? So the word that stuck out for me reading this was seclusion. And he wasn't physically secluded. I mean, his father was nearby, you know, he was living at home, but mentally, his mind was secluded, secluded from the hindrances, sensual desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, and doubt. So, a quality of rapture is that the hindrances are not present. Okay, there's no room for the hindrances. Okay, the second thing that I found interesting from the Samatthanga Sutta is this elaborate metaphor for rapture. This is what the Buddha says. Rapture is just like a lake with spring water welling up from within, having no inflow from east, west, north, or south, and with the skies periodically supplying abundant showers so that the cool fount of water welling up from within the lake would permeate and pervade, suffuse and fill it with cool waters, there being no part of the lake unpervaded by the cool waters. Even so, the monk permeates and pervades, suffuses and fills this very body with the rapture and pleasure born of composure. So the word that stuck out for me in that passage was all-pervading. Rapture is all-pervading. It completely fills the mind and the body. Again, no room for anything else. Okay, so I continued my investigation and I found a talk by Joseph Goldstein. Joseph Goldstein, who is going to talk to us this afternoon, by the way. And as always, he's so clear, you know, and so complete. And so, just a few things that struck me from this talk. First of all, he starts out distinguishing between worldly rapture, which comes from sense pleasures, and non-worldly rapture, which is what we're talking about. And then he talks about these five levels of rapture, which Lyndall mentioned also last week. And as I'm listening to this, I'm thinking, okay, have I experienced that? Is this familiar at all? So he starts with minor rapture, which he says produces tingles and goosebumps. Well, I've had tingles and goosebumps, but I don't know. Was that rapture? I don't know. Then he talks about momentary rapture, which is can produce like sudden jolts or flashes. Now, this reminded me a bit of the Kundalini energy that you learn about in yoga. It's this energy that supposedly resides at the base of the spine, and if you do Kundalini practices, it starts to rise up the spine, and it can produce jolts and flashes and things like that in the body. I never did that, but that's how it was described. Then he talks about wave-like rapture, sensations like waves that may get more and more intense with each wave. And I don't know. Have I experienced that? I don't know. But then he talks about uplifting rapture, where it feels like the body is floating. And I did have that experience once. I was taking a yoga class at this ashram north of Montreal that I mentioned before, and it was at the end of the class. We were outside. It was a beautiful summer's day. We were on this platform, and we were in the final relaxation, which is basically the corpse pose, right? Just lying there with our eyes closed. And it felt like my body was rising off of the yoga mat, like a foot or two. And it didn't frighten me. It was this wonderful feeling. And it lasted until the end of the class, and then it felt like it just kind of gently settled back down. Now, I have always assumed that it didn't really rise. I think the yoga teacher had his eyes open. He would have noticed if one of his students was floating, on the platform, but it really felt like that. And that's the only time in my life I've had that experience. So, anyway, finally, Joseph ends with pervading rapture. And this, I think, is what the Buddha was talking about, this sublime feeling of joy that fills the whole body. I thought, I think I've had that experience, not necessarily in meditation, but maybe in meditation and also outside of meditation. Okay, so then he also says when piti is present, I love this, it makes any experience of the body or mind endearing. I love the word endearing. It's just so, I don't know, it's so sweet or something. And he says it encourages interest. Piti and aversion cannot be present at the same time. They are the direct opposites, and rapture involves total mindfulness and intense energy. So here it is again. There's no room for anything else when rapture is present. And then he says that rapture gives way to sukha, which is happiness. Now, in the transcendental dependent arising sequence, it leads to pasadi, which is tranquility. So I fretted about that for a little while. Okay, which is it? Happiness or tranquility? And finally I said, I let it go. Basically, rapture gives way to something that is more calm because it's so intense. It doesn't last that long. And then he gives this image, which I really related to. He says, imagine that you are walking through the desert. You're hot, you're tired, you're thirsty, and suddenly you see an oasis in the distance. And it's a real oasis, it's not a mirage. That moment, that is rapture. And then you get there and you experience the coolness and you drink the water, and that is this more tranquil form of happiness. So I thought, I have had that experience. And a couple of different things came to mind, and both of these occurred before I was ever on a spiritual path or knew anything about meditation whatsoever. And the first one that I thought of was the birth of my first son. Now, this happened in 1968, the night before the solstice. I was living in Cincinnati with my husband at the time, the father. It was hot. I was really pregnant. I was really uncomfortable, and the baby was 10 days late. And these 10 days, this was a time of dukkha, big time dukkha. The baby will never come. I will be pregnant forever. I am so uncomfortable. A lot of whining took place, you know. So when labor finally started, the night before the solstice, there was this kind of joy that came, you know. It's like it was uncomfortable, it was intense, it was a fast labor for the first child. It was 6 hours, so it was really intense. But there was this joy of, okay, we're doing it, you know, it's finally happening. And for those of you who have experienced labor, you know, it is a very interesting energy, because it completely takes over. There is nothing else happening, and you know there is no way out of this except through it. So you can resist, you can be tense, you can make it worse, or you can just ride it. And that's pretty much what I did. Now, this is, in this day, we did not know the gender of the baby beforehand. We did not have that picture of the embryo floating in the amniotic fluid. And I sort of was expecting the baby to be a girl, because my sister and I are girls, and my sister had had her first child who was a girl. So it was like our family does girls, right? So anyway, we didn't really have a preference, but that was just kind of my assumption. Okay, so anyway, when finally I was moved to the delivery room, I knew we were getting close to the end. And the doctor was there. There was this mirror set up so I could see exactly what was happening. Some of you are nodding your heads because you've been there. And the doctor's saying, okay, just a few more contractions. Now push. I thought, push, there's something I can do, okay? And so, you know, I saw it. I saw it all. I saw the head crowning. I saw the birth. I heard the baby cry. And I heard the doctor say, it's a boy. And I said, a boy? Wow, hey. And, you know, the doctor, he cut the cord. He washed him off, wrapped him up, and handed him to me. I will never forget that moment. I looked at him, and in my mind, I said, oh, it's you. Of course it's you. Who else could it possibly be? That was the most intense joy I had ever felt in my life. In my life. That was rapture. And it happened again with my second son, but I was more prepared that time. Okay, so the second experience that I thought about took place about 7 years later. I was, at this point, I was with my third and final husband, living in a commune in Skagit County, up the mountain from Clear Lake. We had his daughter and my two sons half-time. And this particular day, they were with their other parents. So we had decided, we knew about this logging road that went up to the top of the mountain, which started not far from where we lived. So we decided we were going to hike up that logging road and spend the night at the top of the mountain. And this wasn't like Mount Baker, not, you know, it was a smaller mountain. So we packed up our stuff, our sleeping bags and tent and food and water. They were heavy, heavy packs. And we started off and we're walking up this mountain. And at first we're going at a pretty good clip. We're young, in good shape, you know. But about halfway through, oh, we were so tired. We were like slogging it out. I mean, one foot after the other. That's all we could do. We couldn't talk, we couldn't do anything. And then we came around a curve and a little rise, and we saw it, the top of the mountain, like the oasis, right? And we looked at each other and we started running. We ran up the rest of that path. That was rapture, this amazing energy that came. And then we got there and we dropped our packs and we looked around and we could see the bay, we could see the Skagit River, Mount Baker, the other mountains. It was just glorious. And yes, it did settle down into this more tranquil form of happiness. So that was like my trudging through the desert moment. And both of these things happened before I knew anything about a spiritual path, anything about meditation. Okay, so the other thing that Joseph Goldstein talks about that I did want to mention, and Lyndall did mention this last time, but this struck me, the rapture of understanding, of suddenly understanding something. And he talks about reflections that arouse piti or rapture. And the first one he talks about are the qualities of the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha can arouse rapture. And I thought, ah. And this took me back about maybe 10 years ago. I was still living in Quebec. And some of you know, one of the things that I have done and still occasionally do is lead the Dances of Universal Peace. Okay, so these dances they're meditative dances that use the mantras and the sacred phrases from all of the world's spiritual traditions, and it grew out of this Sufi order that I had been connected to. And so the leader, gives an attunement to the mantra, what it means and everything, teaches the words, the music, and the steps, and then they're done in a circle, and you just do the dance over and over and over. So this particular time, I was not leading, actually. I was participating. Someone else was leading, so I was in the circle, and we did a dance from the Buddhist tradition that I had not done before. Beautiful, beautiful dance. This was actually with the Seattle Dance Circle. And the dance had two parts. The words to the first part were Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu, which is translated as "May all beings everywhere be well and happy." Okay. The second part was the three refuges: Buddha Ya, Dharma Ya, Sangha Ya. And as we did these, and I had heard about the three refuges before, but I hadn't really thought much about them. But as we did this dance over and over, and when you start, you're in your head because you're remembering the words and the steps and everything. But as you do it, it gets into the body and you come out of the head and you're just there and you can go very deep and it can be a very meditative experience. And when we would get to that part of the dance, and it would go like Buddha Ya, Dharma Ya, Sangha Ya, and suddenly I got it. I understood what the word refuge meant in relationship to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, even though I knew nothing much about Buddhism. And that was the rapture of understanding. And that evening has a lot to do with why I'm here today, because I wanted to know more. I wanted to know more. Okay, so a couple of conclusions that I came to in this little investigation. First of all, the fact that I had these experiences before I knew anything about this path or meditation at all, I could see that rapture can occur when the conditions for rapture are present. Whenever there is an experience that requires the full presence and concentration of the body and the mind, that it is so compelling that it requires that full attention. And I find this reassuring. I find it confirms my belief that these teachings, the Dharma, are addressing the universal human experience. They are not these esoteric teachings just for people who have a certain password or something like that. No, as I said, rapture happens when the conditions are right. It can be enjoyable, it can feel like enlightenment, even though it isn't. It can also be too strong and too intense sometimes for some people. But that's what happens, and it's good to understand what's happening. So what these teachings are giving us, I feel, are a deep understanding of what we already know. We may have forgotten, but we are acquiring an understanding of what we have always known. Okay, thank you. Thank you for your kind attention. Okay, anybody have anything to say? Yes, Claire, you can unmute. Yeah.
Judith, that talk was just so beautiful.
Thank you.
Now I want to have you talk to me every day. It was so beautiful. I'm a midwife, and I have clearly witnessed that rapture. And I think birth really brings that rapture to people in the room, not even just necessarily the birthing mother. I was remembering when I was young, like in my teens and 20s, and I was, new to California, and I was dabbling in all the different spiritual paths. When meditating, the instruction was always to send a cord down to the center of the earth, because if you don't, you might float up and break the cord, the silver cord. And I do remember when times when I would just get really floaty during a meditation, and I thought I hadn't grounded myself enough, but I don't know if that's the levitating you were talking about. And it was like total naivety on my part. I don't remember any teaching. I just remember sitting and floating. I'm a little confused about why we talk about rapture. It seems a little too obvious. It seems like it's something that I have accessed a lot of times. And so I'm confused about why it's a thing in Buddhism.
Well,
Do
I think it's a thing because it occurs in this sequence. It's not that it doesn't occur outside of meditation, because obviously it does, but just because what we're talking about is this sequence of steps that the mind, the consciousness, goes through, according to the Buddha, on this journey from dukkha to liberation. There is this period or this experience of rapture. And I have experienced it in meditation as well. And I think the floating, I mean, I loved it, I thought it was wonderful. I didn't want any cord tying me down to the ground. So, but yeah, it is a part of it. And I think the fact that these experiences can occur, as I said, the fact that they can occur outside of meditation, outside of a spiritual path, is confirming, because what it means is the conditions are there that are right for that experience. And when we're meditating, it, at least in theory, what we are doing is setting the conditions so that we are focused on the present moment, so we're not distracted. Of course, what actually happens often is that we are distracted because our minds are so busy going around in circles. But the idea is to focus and set up the conditions for this gradual awakening and unfolding of the consciousness.
Do you think that the act of like loving and giving to someone, especially a stranger, is that rapture?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on the situation, on the circumstances. So what I got, and this is new for me too, but what I got from this is the all-pervading intensity of the experience, the fact that there's no room for anything else except that feeling. And, one thing about this path, this transcendental dependent arising, is that there are like these four different kinds of happiness. We have joy, then we have rapture, then we have tranquility, then we have happiness. And I think we could tie ourselves in knots trying to distinguish between them. I mean, I think it's useful and interesting to investigate each one, but at the same time, when they are occurring, I don't think it's really necessarily that useful to say, oh, well, is this rapture or is this joy or is this happiness? Yeah. Obviously, giving and being generous and all, it feels good. It feels good. Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? I know Candace made a comment in the chat. Okay, Steve. We'll go.
Thank you for that talk. It was great. I'm wondering, I think you might have said this was Joseph Goldstein, but you talked about the opposite of aversion is PT.
Yeah.
And that opposites was so, it just so resonated, like thinking about a state of the world where there is no aversion, is the opposite of aversion is such an amazing concept right now.
Isn't it?
And so just to think about that and that finding that state and then how it leads to tranquility I don't know if you could just say a little bit more about that opposite concept or where you picked that up and what that was about.
It was Joseph Goldstein who said that, and he said it's because PT or rapture is all pervading. There's no room for anything else, so aversion cannot be there. And yeah, they are the exact opposite because rapture is embracing, It's accepting. You're in the experience and you're there. You're totally there. Aversion is pushing it away. Yeah, does that make sense?
I think we lean into aversion because we think it means something, but to think about, we want the opposite of aversion at all times would be great. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So it's just resonating. So thank you.
Yeah. I think aversion is basically fear. Sometimes it manifests as anger or something like that, but at base, I think it's fear. Yeah. Okay, Candace, I wanted you to elaborate on your chat really quickly, and then we'll go to Julie.
Oh, I'm not sure what I said. I think I was just responding to someone asking if Joseph's talk would be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And it will. It'll take some time, but while I'm here,
okay.
I just, one of the things I really connected with Claire's question about why are we talking about this? Because a lot of what I've been thinking about with the transcendental dependent arising is that we really are off base when we think it's something we achieve. Mm-hmm. Like we reach this step and I reach this step and oh, I got this now. And it's just like the Gajanas. I don't think that's what the Buddha intended. I think this is sort of like if you feel this, you're on the path. You're mm-hmm. you're doing it. Don't worry. You're on the path. It's sort of a reassurance.
Yeah.
And so it's nothing that we have to say, oh, I know it. We just, if we feel something really strange and in meditation, we go, you know, that could have been one of these things. And you don't even have to label it. You just say, well, that was pretty cool. I like that. You know? And anyway, that's what I was thinking. And I really loved Claire's questions about that.
Thank you. Yeah.
And
Julie.
Talk.
Oh, Julie.
Hi. Thanks, Judith, for your talk. I just wanted to add something that might be helpful to someone. I've been in a Sutta study class for over a year now, where we're slowly going through the discourses that are attributed to the Buddha. And he talks about those jhanas more than any other kind of, you know, recommendation for a path to follow. And to just kind of piggyback on some of the conversation that was about not so much achieving something, but freeing yourself of something. I think the reason, my understanding is the reason that PT comes in the first jhana is because that's, you know, the first place you get to when you've really, in a state of meditation, managed to reach such a level of peace that those thoughts aren't, you know, hitting you from all sides. So you're relaxed enough that it just naturally arises as a sort of a, you know, a little congratulation sign, like you've relaxed a lot. So I don't know if that's helpful to anybody, but that's been how I've been learning about it. But thank you so much for adding all of this additional ways to look at it. It's been really helpful.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's what we experience, you know, like Candace said, it's not, okay, I've got this now I'm on to the next one. It's just to give a better understanding of what we're experiencing when the conditions are there to experience them. Yeah. Lyndall.
Oh, one thing I wanted to say about what Julie was saying about it arise, PT arising when we first get to the point where we're relaxed enough. Another way to think about it would be when we get to the point where we're connected enough.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually mindful enough of whatever is going on that we're really there with it.
Right.
So that might be a person's experience even more than relaxation. And I really appreciate the way that you talked about rapture occurring in lots of different situations. And it's also part of lots of different traditions. I mean, in the Hindu meditation, in the Christian tradition, they have their own versions of rapture. And I think that one of the reasons that the Buddha talks about it and talks about the jhanas is because people already were doing those practices.
Yeah.
They were familiar with it. And so it's sort of like, this is a way, you know, you start with this and then it opens up to all this rest of this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's something to keep in mind too. And I really resonate too with this idea that this is a description of how the path unfolds, but it isn't something to take as I must get this, I must get that, I must get this. And if what I experience isn't exactly this, I'm doing it wrong. But it's one sort of map.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I said, I mean, that's the conclusion I reached, is that this happens, okay? This happens. It happens in meditation. It happens outside of meditation. And what we're getting is a better understanding of the conditions that lead to this happening, first of all, you know, this total concentration, this total presence, this total mindfulness. That's when rapture arises, when something is so compelling that you are fully present for it and nothing else is happening in your consciousness. And that happens. Mm-hmm. It happens in life. It happens in, well, meditation is life. I mean, it's not like, but it happens inside and outside of meditation, right? And so this just gives us a better understanding of it. But I think it can be a trap in a sense, because then you start thinking, okay, I've got this one and now I got to get this one. And, you know, and when we get into that, then we're striving and we're, you know, grasping, and that's not the point.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Anybody else? Deanna.
Something you just said was kind of my question was, you know, if we start with suffering and go to faith as the first step or whatever, do other things just kind of fall into place? Or is there something that we should be doing to follow the steps, I guess? It's like, what is the effort that we're putting into this is my question.
Yeah, well, I think that what we should be doing is exactly what we're doing, which is practicing mindfulness, both within and outside of meditation. You know, that's really the point, being present with what is. And the more we can do that, the more we can train the mind to be present, the more we will begin to have these experiences, rather than thinking of the experiences as the goal. It's just understanding them as they come along and understanding, oh, okay, this very intense feeling that I'm having. And as I said, for some people, rapture is too intense. It's uncomfortable. And, you know, I have a friend that says that. So, yeah, I think it's there's always a risk of getting too goal oriented, you know, and definitely that is one of my tendencies. So I know it well. Right. Nina.
Hi, everyone. Excuse me for not being on video, but oh, I loved your talk, Judith. It was so wonderful to hear your experiences in that. And I love that you pointed to understanding. And I think for me, that's been a significant path to rapture, is being in a hindrance and then realizing that I'm suffering and why I'm suffering, and then realizing that there is a different way and understanding that. Mm-hmm. And that for me has brought rapture to light for me, and be able to go beyond that into metta or, you know, kindness and love. And yeah. And I also feel that it's an intense energy that can be not only transform myself, but also be transferred to others. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. Claire, here you are again. You're muted.
Okay.
There you go.
What Nina just said brought to mind for me an experience I had a year ago or so, where I was overcome with a lot of feelings, and I was crying. I was sobbing, and I thought, my first thought was, I'm so lonely. I'm so sad. And then my second thought was, no, actually, that is not what I'm feeling. I'm feeling so much love for the people in my life. So,
very interesting. Yes. Mm-hmm. And I've had that experience too, you know. This is this. And oh, wait a minute. No.
This is rapture, actually.
Yeah, I began to see it from a different perspective. Yeah. And I think that's certainly one thing that a spiritual path does, is give you that bigger perspective on your experiences, you know, like, and also thinking, oh, I could be caught in this, but I don't have to be. I don't have to be. Yeah. And I think there is rapture in that, certainly some kind of joy in that kind of understanding too. Yeah. Okay, anyone else? I love this discussion. I love hearing what you guys have to say. It is just so inspiring. Yeah. Okay, well, if we are done, I think we will just sit for a few minutes. And yeah.